Growing up in Hawaii, Ronald Takaki never felt he was part of a minority. Not until he arrived at his Midwestern college did he begin to learn about discrimination against Asian Americans. The histories of immigration he studied ignored a whole section of history he knew about firsthand. Takaki's mother's parents left Japan to work as plantation hands on Maui. His father came to Hawaii from Japan as a young man to help his father. Takaki is now a historian who teaches ethnic studies at the University of California in Berkeley. His work is focused on race relations. He's the author of Iron Cages, a study of race and culture here in the last century, and his new book, Strangers from a Different Shore, traces the history of Asian Americans over the past 150 years. Takaki divides immigration to America into two waves.
For those who came in the 19th century, like my grandparents, America for them was a choice. They chose to come here. It was an act of extravagance, if you will. This is a term that I use in the book. For those who came after 1965, as refugees, coming here was an act of necessity. And I think this does mean that the groups have very different attitudes toward America. I think for the first waves, America was a new home. I can imagine those first immigrants coming over here and standing in the presence of what F. Scott Fitzgerald called this fresh green breast of a new world. Now, for the refugees, however, when they come here, they do not see America as a place for settlement. They did not choose to come here. They were forced to come here. And I think many of them are having extreme difficulties making adjustments here. I've interviewed Hmong refugees in Wisconsin, and they tell me that the elders sit at home behind the windows, staring outside at the snow falling on the ground. And these are people who come from the tropical mountains of Laos. And they feel really isolated here. They feel cut off from their past. But they also feel that there's no future for them in America.
What is the path of a Hmong person from Laos to Wisconsin? I can understand settling in, you know, a more moderate, temperate climate.
Yep.
But how would Hmong people end up in Wisconsin?
Yeah, that was my question too. And they said, well, we were sponsored by certain church organizations. And we began to cluster in La Crosse and also Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And then gradually more and more of us were attracted then to this area. And so if you take La Crosse, the Hmong represent the largest non-white ethnic group in the area. There are about almost 2,000 to 3,000 Hmong living there, but they feel very isolated up there. They've told me that people don't know who we are. They think we're Chinese. They call us Chinks. Most Americans don't realize that the Hmong fought for the United States in the service of the CIA. Many of them lost their fathers, their brothers, and here they are now. They're living in our country, but our country doesn't know why they're here, and our country, in many ways, still refuses to accept them.
Mm-hmm. Would you you went to college in the Midwest, to Ohio?
Yeah, that's when I realized that Hawaii is not the world. then I was a minority.
So how were you treated? Were you invited as an exotic to different kinds of forums?
Oh man, was I viewed as exotic? Yeah. In fact, I get invited to these dinners for foreign students. I get sponsored by church groups and also Rotary clubs and so forth. I would explain to them that I'm not a foreign student. I'm from Hawaii, and they would say, "Well, isn't Hawaii a foreign country?" I would have to say, hey, no, you know, we're actually part of the United States. And they would say, well, why don't you come to the dinner anyway? But what really made me feel like a stranger on campus was not these invitations to dinners for foreign students, or not questions like, well, where did you learn to speak English? But what really made me feel like a stranger was what was happening in the curriculum. You know, I take a course like the History of America, and there wouldn't be a single reference to Asian Americans in America's past, except maybe to the Chinese building the railroad. When I went through college, there wasn't even a reference to America's concentration camps for Japanese Americans during World War II. Then, too, I would take a course called, like, the American novel. And every novel that I read in this course was written by a white man. And so the impression I had was that, well, there were no Asian American authors. There were no Black or Chicano or Native American writers. And I think what made me feel then like a stranger, Sedge, was the Eurocentric perspective of the college curriculum.
You've written several books, part of your academic career as a professor of ethnic studies, that have described the various way that minority groups and immigrant groups have been treated in this country. One was on violence in the Black imagination, other on Hispanic groups. What happened in your life to make you focus in part on your own experience in Hawaii?
Well, what happened was this, Edge. I was writing Iron Cages in Hawaii, and an uncle, a favorite uncle, and I would often sit around in his backyard and drink beer and talk story. And I was telling him about this book that I was writing on racism in America, focusing on Blacks, Chicanos, Native Americans, and the Chinese. And one afternoon, his eyes lit up, and he said, "Hey," in very mellifluous pidgin, "hey, why you no go write a book about us, huh? Why you only write about those folks on the mainland?" After all, he said, "your grandfather came here as a contract laborer. Your grandmother came here as a worker, too, under contract." So this sparked my curiosity, and also this sparked something within me, you know, like a fire, huh, to know more about who I was then. And this led to the writing of a book entitled Pauhana, Plantation Life and Labor in Hawaii. Well, after that book was published, some Takaki relatives found me. They're still on the plantation. There are now four generations of Takakis working on one of the plantations on Maui. And they told me their Takaki stories, and they also told me about my Takaki family in Hawaii, in Japan. And when I came back from Japan in 1986 then, I was inspired, you know, to write this larger story of Asians in America. So this book is a book that inscribes the Takaki family stories.
Mm-hmm. You bring up a number of issues pertaining to the ethnic diversity of immigration here. The Koreans, for instance, who have come here, have made a reputation of being greengrocers.
Right.
Spike Lee featured a Korean grocer family in his movie movie Do the Right Thing. And the characteristic that seems to be most important is the long hours, the hard work, the quality of self-employment, and a desire to make money.
Yeah, you've seen the movie, I take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a very important scene in the movie where three Black men are sitting on the sidewalk in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Black community in New York City, and one of them points to the Lee's Korean Green grocery store across the street. And he says, "Them folks have been here for only a year, and yet already they own that store. Why can't we Blacks do the same thing?" Unfortunately, Spike Lee leaves this question unanswered. I wish Spike Lee had taken his cameras into the back room of that Korean green grocery store and showed us, hanging on the wall, a college degree. 78% of Korean green grocers in New York City have college degrees. They were not small shopkeepers in Korea. They were professionals. They were engineers. They were administrators, white-collar workers. They became shopkeepers in America after coming here and encountering racial discrimination and also language difficulties. But you learn none of this from Spike Lee.
What do you think still attracts immigrants to come to this country? There's been this terrible history of discrimination and mistreatment throughout this century and the past, yet this country still draws immigrants from throughout the world. What is it that continues to attract them?
Well, you know, as a historian, I tried to imagine why my grandfather left Kumamoto, Japan, to come to these shores. I think America, for him, beckoned. It beckoned. It allowed him to exercise his imagination, to think what he could become, you know, with his dreams unfurled before the wind. So, and I think that same vision of America still beckons immigrants today. You know, the idea that, hey, America is a liminal space. By liminal, I mean it's at the border. It's still an unformed society. It's an unfinished society. Whereas the societies in the old countries are finished societies. They are formed societies. They're rigid riverbanks that determine one's life in terms of one's class or one's gender and so forth. But here in America, we do have this vision of ourselves and our country as a place where we're, as Carlos Bulusan put it, where untried materials could be tested and new people could build themselves.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ronald Takaki, for coming in on Fresh Air for us today.
Okay, bye.